And it's thinking about it. Hey, we are now on the air live. Thanks for tuning into the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here with me today is a panel of frequent co-hosts and guests, starting with frequent co-host and collaborator, Aid Smith. How you doing, Aid?
Oh, I'm pretty good, thank you.
How are things across the pond this morning?
Rainy and windy.
So typical Wednesday, yeah.
Hey! Fine summer weather in England. And speaking of English, there is John Gibbons. How are you, John?
I'm fine, guys. All good. All right.
Let me guess, also rainy and windy where you are, John?
Believe it or not, yes. But then again, I do live in Manchester, which is renowned for being more rainy and windy than anywhere else. Isn't that right, eh?
Okay.
Well, it's sunny and snowy here in Colorado, which is also stereotypical, so... And the legendary RPG figure Chuck Rice is with us today. How you doing, Chuck?
I am magnificent. I am on vacation starting today, and I do not have to be back to work until Tuesday, January 5th. So I am awesome.
Has the drinking started yet?
The drinking began last night. Yes.
Yeah. Do I know you or do I know you?
The bar was visited. Starting at around 5:01, I get out of work at 5. The bar is literally like 3 shops down from where I work, 3 mm-hmm. doors down.
Do they have your plaque on a stool or anything?
They have said to me, they were like, why didn't we see you on Friday? And I was like, oh, it was too crowded, and I like to sit at the bar. And they were like, just tell us. We'll make somebody leave from the bar. And I was like, no.
You got to the same state as, like, Norm when you walk and you go, Norm.
I was just like, you people are insane. I said, I'm not doing that.
That's pretty crazy. Well, hey, and we should probably talk about your curriculum vitae for listeners who maybe not familiar with you or off the top. Chuck was kind of a minor RPG celebrity during the D20 boom. They worked for RPG Objects. Why don't you do a quick rundown of some of your Blood and Fists? Was nominated for an Emmy. That was one of your big books. Tell us about some of the others just real fast.
I guess Blood and Relics was one of my better-selling books. It's kind of based on Holy Blood, Holy Grail, so is the Da Vinci Code. So if you've read the Da Vinci Code, it's going to play a lot like that. I did Blood and Guts, which is a kind of an attempt to bring a little bit more realism to military stuff in D20 Modern. Blood and Fists, which is real world martial arts. Blood and Space, sci-fi source book. So. You know, I kind of...
the theme somewhere along there. I don't quite know what it is.
Yeah. Well, so we did Blood and Space first, and so then we did Blood and Fists. And so then the next one that we were going to do was military, and I said to Chris Davis, who runs RPG Objects, well, so clearly it has to be Blood and Guts, because we've come this far. Why stop now? And he was like, I don't know. And I was like, No. Okay, look, Patton was Blood and Guts. So it literally, this one, we can stop after this, but this one must be Blood and Guts. And then we just decided to never stop doing it.
So. Well, cool. And then you were, ran Vigilance Press
solo.
For a while.
Yeah.
And solo.
Yeah. I had actually started Vigilance Press before mm-hmm. I started working with RPG Objects, but then I let it languish in comfortable obscurity for a while I was working for RPG Objects, and then Chris Davis decided he wanted to get a real job for some reason, probably money, then I kind of started pouring my effort back into Vigilance Press, and I met some weird guy named Mike Lafferty. I don't know. Things went real weird then.
It all gone wrong.
Chuck was my AA sponsor. Nothing good came out of that, let me tell you.
Yeah, and I'm the best AA sponsor ever. I'm just like, here, kid, here's some NyQuil.
He's passing me the hip flask, going, these guys are liars. Here you go. But anyway, Chuck is now gainfully employed in the gaming industry at... Mayfair
Games. Produces makers of fine games such as The Settlers of Catan.
Never heard of
exactly.
it.
Is that like Monopoly?
Many reporters have described it as a cross between Monopoly and Risk, which boggles my damn mind. But they're like, crazy. So there's money involved? No. There are resources. Okay, so that's basically money. And there's territory? It's like, well, there's an island. So Monopoly and Risk. No?
That's just bad marketing, Chuck. They want to get rid of the person who's responsible for marketing in that business.
Right.
Unless we forget, Chuck's also responsible for the Cones of Dunshire, if you watch Parks and Rec. So.
Mayfair did that, but yes, great designers, Morgan Dottenville, that was actually his insane genius.
All right, well, cool. And Chuck is with us today because he has returned to RPG design and has a new game. So tell us about it, Chuck. What you got?
I've talked about it with you guys a couple times in the past. I probably spent about 3 years total working on this, playtesting it, you know, getting the art together. It's called AZ, After Zombies, and it is kind of my attempt to bring the kind of current serious zombie fiction like The Walking Dead to a game where yes, the zombies are there. They're, obviously they're a threat, but there's also all of the baggage that humans bring with us. You know, we're assholes, honestly. And so I wanted to make a game where that kind of strife would also be factored in.
Okay. So let's talk about inspirations for zombie. What would you pull from most strongly, you think, for this?
Probably... The two most important sources, well, I guess I'll say three. I always a huge fan of World War Z, the book, mm-hmm. not the movie. The similarities between the movie and the book, I think, end with the title.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the book I always thought was a great kind of, you know, Studs Terkel riff, taking the good war and applying it to zombies. And then there's a kind of independent novel series that I'm real fond of called Day by Day Armageddon, they are written by an active duty soldier. I believe he's in the Air Force or the Navy. And they're very much, he has a lot of practical survival knowledge and a lot of practical military knowledge, and so it's great. It's written in the form of a daily diary that he starts keeping the day civilization falls apart by chance. They're really great. You can find them on Amazon. You can get them on your tablet, which is how I read things generally. And then, of course, the Walking Dead comics and the TV show, which they're different, but I kind of like them both in for different reasons.
Now, we were talking before we hit the big record button here, and John, you were saying that you like the comics but hate the TV show.
Yes, I think a lot of people probably do, actually.
Yes, I would agree with that. I can certainly see liking just the comic. I can certainly see that.
Yeah, it was a total different. I mean, the comic was so unusual at the time when it first came out because it was kind of like a sort of, I suppose you could say it was like a soap opera in the background because it was such a long-running comic about a group and a family and their struggles, etc. Yes. But then I think when the TV series came along, they went to the extreme, so, you know, it became too much of a case of, right, well, we've got to change the story because we need to make a good television episode. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I know that's the way it goes. It goes that way from other comics, etc., when they get turned to film. But I just find it a bit boring. I don't know what it is. I just, you know, for a medium such as film that should be, you know, fantastic, I just find it a little bit... not slow, but a bit far-fetched. I know that sounds strange when you're talking about a zombie series, but just nothing like the books. They didn't grip me. I mean, when you're reading the graphic novels, you know, the page turns, they're very gripping, even though the artwork is quite sort of grayscale and basic. But you know, the series just doesn't hit my boat at all.
Yeah. Well, and I think certainly from an art perspective, like The Walking Dead still does things like there will be whole panels that are just kind of focusing on you know, the emotion of a character as shown through his facial expression, and that's so hard. Like, so few comics can pull that off.
Yeah, and I think also as well is, I mean, when you read the graphic novels book to book, you definitely see a serious decline in the individuals.
Yes.
And I know they're trying to hit that a little bit in the series, and I suppose there's only so much you can do if they're like method actors about losing weight and, you know, becoming more raggedy looking. But, you know, when you look at the stage they're at now in the series compared to the same stage in the books, they are vastly different individuals to when they first started. And
right.
I don't think they've got that, apart from making them look a bit more dirty and get a bit more crazy-eyed look, you know, on the TV.
I will say, though, one thing the TV series did that I very much appreciated was, I think there's like a 2.5-season span where the main character, Rick, wears the same damn shirt. And you can tell he hasn't washed it. Yeah. And I'm just like, that's kind of beautiful.
Just it didn't rock my boat at all. I did try to watch it. I think I watched the first sort of season and a half.
People
say to me, "Oh, you've got to watch the second or the third season. That's the best." But it's like, well, you know, I've not got enough hours in the day to sit and watch. You know, watch a TV series.
The first couple years of that show were really rough. Yeah. They had to really serious, and it's weird to think about, but it took them a long time to figure out what the show was, which again seems weird to me because it's like, well. But maybe look at the comic.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I still watch it. I've watched every episode since, and there's two things that bug the hell out of me about it, which is, apart from one season, unless I'm mistaken, it's been, the first episode has been something like, let's go and find something, and they try and find it for the entire 13 episodes. They find it in the last episode, and it blows up, explodes, dies, whatever. And then the next season, it's like, oh, well, that's over. Let's go and find something new. And that's kind of like the expanse of the thing.
Yeah.
And then this series just gone. The thing that's bugged me about that is that in most TV series, if you've got stuff happen simultaneously, you'll cut between characters. This series has been like, let's show all of the stuff from Rick's perspective, and let's show the same hour and a half from Glynn's perspective, and let's show the same hour and a half from... And so literally, the 13 episodes have been, or 6 episodes, whatever we've had, 8 episodes, whatever, has been like 2 hours worth of time that's happened for every single character.
Right.
And it's what a waste of time.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I think the problem they've got, though, is because obviously, you know, when you're making a zombie film, you know you've got a very apparent end. Either the zombies take over or people kill the zombies, etc. But when they're trying to drag it out so long into this series, it's obviously making money, so they produce more series and more seasons of it. There's no end in sight, if you see what I mean. So it's not like, you know you're getting to say the cure to the zombie plague or whatever. It just becomes a soap opera based around zombies chasing you down.
Well, see, we don't know how it's going to end, though, because
Kirkman,
you know, he has not, to my knowledge, told anyone.
No, but you can do that in graphic novel form because it's obviously a lot more stylized, a lot more compressed in the books. But when you're trying to drag it out in a TV series, that's why you get these. Well, let's do an episode on so-and-so's perspective. It's just because you can't get that. And they're so stupid. I mean, by now, you know, you'd either be dead or be shit out of surviving. And they still do these stupid things where you're going, what are you going in there for? Why are you doing that?
That's always puzzled me about some of the settlement they come across last series. It's like, so surely you've survived for the 2 years or whatever that's happened since it started, because obviously the Laurie was pregnant with the baby, and so that's at least 9 months straight away there. So it's got to be 2 years. It's like, you're telling me that you're just sitting in your houses going, well, there's zombies outside, but I don't know what's going on.
Ludicrous.
That you should be able to survive. Everyone should at least be able to shoot a gun by now, for God's sakes, you know.
Yeah.
I think the musical episode was probably a step too far.
Absolutely.
That will be coming, don't worry.
They will. Yeah, you know what? Someone will probably get a bump on their head, and they will, you know, and they'll lose it.
It was all a dream?
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that's obviously that they can't do on the TV show, you know, in the comic, Robert Kirkman and his great artists have full control of time. So in the comic, for example, Carl is still quite young. Whereas over the course of the series, like the boy that started playing Carl is a man now, and so they kind of can't fudge that, right? Like he's taller than the guy that plays Rick.
he's got a full beard, I think. So no, it's definitely a thing. I gotta tell you, I really miss Shane though. I mean, as much as a questionable, you know, moral person that he was or whatever, he just he was interesting to watch.
He became such a cartoon by the end, though.
But I missed that actor. He's going to be Punisher in the next season.
He's going to be Punisher, yes. Okay, so,
and I'll tell you what, he was really good in Fury.
Yes. He's going
to... that was him, yeah.
I think he's going to be a perfect Punisher. I really do.
I hope so, because Punisher's my favorite comic book character, and yeah. I'll shrivel up and die.
Oh, so you're not a fan of the Dolph Lundgren?
Great. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, I actually preferred... I know a lot of people like the... was it the Zane movie? But I actually like the one with the... what's his name? The last one.
Punisher Warzone?
Yeah, Punisher Warzone. I thought, even though I wasn't quite keen on the guy who plays him, I thought the actual feel of it and the look of it was very good.
It reminded me the most of the Garth Ennis Punisher of any of the movies. For my money, that's the best Punisher. There's no other superheroes, or just, you know, that one guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Illustrated by Steve Dillon.
Yep, indeed. Speaking of Nazis, Dead Snow. For my money, that's the best zombie movie in the last, say, 5-10 years.
It is very cool. Yeah, very cool.
I disagree.
Is it zombies?
Yeah, it's dead Nazi zombies.
Nazi zombies. I mean, how can you get wrong with that? Yeah.
No. Best zombie movie last 10 years, Zombieland.
Oh! Okay. Yes. All right. I'm not going to argue because I love that movie.
Yes. I have a couple of nods to that in AZ, especially in terms of it really got me thinking of, I guess it's Rule One in Zombieland. And that was, when I was thinking about AZ, I definitely wanted to express the power of just running away, right? And that shaped the experience system in part to where you don't get experience for killing anything in AZ is probably one of the biggest differences between it and a traditional RPG. And so I definitely, that kind of led me down the road of experience over time, where if you do just run away, you're still going to level up in AZ. And so I always definitely wanted that, because if you only get experience for killing, then that kind of channels your behavior, right? You're going to engage.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a post-apocalyptic survival situation, so just surviving is experience, yes. Right?
Right.
So, well, cool. So let me, I guess that kind of gets to the heart of the matter is there are so many different flavors, you know, of zombie entertainment, from the Dead Snow and Zombieland to, you know, some of the more serious takes on it. How do you advise game masters to kind of set up a game for the kind of tone they want for a Zombie Chronicle?
Well, I would recommend, and I guess this is kind of game mastery 101, but a lot of times game masters, and I know I certainly have done this from time to time, you have an idea in your head, like you have a setting, or you have a storyline, or you just have a feeling that you want to evoke. But the step that I think too few of us take, that I would recommend that you take when you're making any campaign, but also after Zombies, is then before you run the first game, talk to your players, like send an email out to them and find out what they want. I think that is just going to make things, because maybe they want something totally silly from a zombie game, and if you have this very serious, you know, meditation on who is really the monster in mind, and they all want to, you know, name their characters, you know, Zed, you're probably not going to be satisfied, right?
Fair enough. All right, well, cool. Well, hey, tell us a little bit more about the game. It's a percentage-only system, right?
Yep. All resolution takes place on D100. If you're making a very hard skill check, it has a minus 25. If you're making a very easy skill check, it has a plus 25. Mm-hmm. you you can attempt every skill in the game at one half of the ability score it's based on. So if you don't have any combat skills and you pick up a knife, you can use it at half of your combat score. And I definitely wanted to make combat skill and ability score because since you're dealing with a cross section of people, like one player might be a former librarian and one player could be a gunnery sergeant, a marine, right? And so if you make it an ability score, then yes, you can get better at combat, but you can have at the beginning of the game a vast difference in combat skills between players.
Okay, cool.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask how playtesting's been for it.
Playtesting's been great. Jeremy Peterson, my editor, he was running it for a group for a time. And I've done some kind of one-shot play tests, but then I ran it regularly for a group of my fellow Mayfair employees in our spare time, and so it's seen. I think it's been kind of perfect, and it's a product of how much time I had, obviously. But like I've done shorter one-shot things, and then I've done longer full-fledged campaigns. Whereas like for example, back in my RPG Objects days, a lot of times, because I had tight deadlines, everything was playtested, because I firmly believe you can't make a good book. If you're writing rules, they need to be playtested. But sometimes it would be very specialized short-term situations where it's like, okay, you make a martial artist, I'm going to make a martial artist. Let's just fight and see how it works, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's...
I did a bit of playtesting with my group. I ran a short adventure, about a 5 or 6 session adventure using the AZ rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I spoke about this, Chuck, but I like the system. I think it's kind of like it's not too crunchy, but it's not very lightweight. Kind of like say Fate. It's a nice step in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, skill resolution and actually creating the characters is very quick to do, and it can still be crunchy for the GM because. You know, when you get your hands on the book itself, there's lots of charts, isn't there, Chuck? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, it's not death by charts because I like it. I mean, literally, but you know, if the GM really wants to use them, he's got a raft of sort of random encounters, random objects to be found throughout the campaign. You know, lots of good stuff like that, which I thought was really useful. And plus, I like it slightly crunchy, so I quite like the fact I had all these charts I could roll on if I wanted to.
Right.
But
I definitely wanted. There are a lot of tables. Like Rebecca, the person that did the layout for me, she even was like, well, "What is it with you and these tables?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I kind of felt her pain, but what I found running it is that I mean, I wanted to make it as easy on the game master as possible because it's very difficult in a game like this. Like I wrote an adventure where one of the characters had as a disadvantage, he had like a sick grandmother that was with them and she needed medicine. And so I'm like, okay, so she's going to need her medicine. And so I'm going to write this adventure that takes place in a hospital and there's going to be kind of this mad scientist that's taken over the hospital and he's experimenting on the zombies and it's going to be great. And the players were just like, no, why would we ever go to a hospital? That's the last place we should go. That's dumb. We're going to the mall and we're going to look for a pharmacy. We're going to raid a pharmacy. And so all of a sudden, my idea is totally out the window. And so... And of course that's going to happen, right? Because the players, unlike in a fantasy campaign, they're much more aware of all their options.
Yeah.
And so...
It just occurs to me, we never said this on the air, John Gibbons, the talented artist here on the podcast with us today, is the artist for After Zombies.
Yes. Okay. Well, and so, of course, he's an unbiased reporter of the book's quality, so everyone should listen to him when he says it's awesome.
It's fantastic. Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. It's good. I mean, I downloaded the PDF today and printed it out in the print shop nearby. And it looks really good. I must admit, it's you know, there's a good amount of images in there to go along with Chuck's tables. So yeah. You know.
Talk about work. What was it like working on the art for this project?
Well, I'd just come off the back of, I think I'd come off the back of the Extreme Earth project. And before Extreme Earth, I was working on quite a few sort of superhero things for you, Mike. So, you know, for Fainting Goat. So, you know, when Chuck approached me and said, oh, I'd fancy getting involved with a zombie horror game, I sort of jumped at the chance because it was something unusual. And, you know, and also it's quite good because it's been a learning curve for me, because obviously to try and get myself away from that, I won't say four colour, but, you know, that, you know, more sort of like colourful sort of images that you might create for a superhero image.
Yeah.
To try and get it more gritty and sort of darker. So we made the decision to go for a full grayscale for like the chapter headings of the book. And I really, you know, taught myself a lot about using grayscale images and the values of a painting. So it's, you know, it's been really helpful for myself in, you know, to the stage where I've actually started to now for future projects start to turn a bit more towards the black and white grayscale way with things, if you know what I mean. But yeah, it was a pleasure. It was really good fun. Really good fun. Plus I got to draw and paint lots of horrible bloody zombies with bits falling off them eating people's arms, and let's face it, the artist doesn't want to do that, you know. So
well, and John, I've always been a big fan of John's art, and so he was my first choice, and I knew I had made the right decision. I approached him about it, and he was like, well, you know, I mean, I'm interested, but I think you should know, like, what you're telling me about the book. I think this art should really be hardcore and kind of disturbing. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Disturbing is good. Body parts falling off, yes.
Yeah, and some of the zombies are quite unpleasant looking. There was, I think there was one called the what's the one that eats other zombies?
The glutton.
The glutton. So I created this image of this glutton. So this zombie stooped over, another zombie eating it, and I sent it to Chuck, and Chuck emailed back and said he couldn't look at the picture, the eyes were getting freaking him out.
So,
well, that works, you know, that works.
Well, I think the first image you sent me, John, because I created the Facebook page, and you were like, here's an image, like a banner, for the, and it's just teeth with, like, blood, and I was like, it kind of freaks me out, but also I think that's perfect.
Yeah, I gotta say I've been really impressed with all the art I've seen for this project. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I mean, obviously I like Chuck's writing, but I'm really looking forward to seeing all that John Gibbons eye candy when I get a chance to sit down with it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I thought about doing any T-shirts or prints of this stuff because some of it looks really curly.
You know, that's an idea. I'm looking at John's image at the shooting range. I think that would work.
Yeah, it was quite good because like I say, Chuck gave me a lot of freedom, artistic freedom. So literally, it was a case of, okay, John, this chapter is going to be called Survivor Enhancement, or you know, exploring the city, whatever. And that was it. And I just, you know, it was quite nice to be able to think, okay, I need to capture a half page, great scale image that takes that into account and sort of tells a story. So yeah, it was pretty good. There was some, you know, interesting choices of artwork in there that seem to work, you know.
Right. And then, I mean, I kind of believe in that, right? Like, Mike, you know, we've worked together. It actually frustrates some experienced freelancers that I've worked with, that they're like, what do you want from me? And I'm like, well, I want what you want to do, right? someone described my company, someone said to me once, I don't think you're running a company here, Chuck. And I was like, well, what the fuck else am I doing? And he said, I think it's kind of a hippie co-op in a way. And I was like, I you're saying that like it's a bad thing, but I mean, I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, I've come around that line of thinking. I used to be a lot more specific in art direction for projects, but as I've gotten older, I've realized that if I hire good artists like Mr. Aid Smith here or Mr. John Gibbons,
right,
and just give them kind of a loose, basic, you know, idea, kind of let them do what they do best, usually the result is both faster than better, and better than, you know, if I was micromanaging the art process. So yeah, I definitely take after you these days in that respect.
Yeah, I think realistically, all you're doing is, because obviously when you work for the bigger companies and you speak to the art directors there, you know, the art directors tend to be artists themselves, or they've got, you know, they've got a firm grip in the mind of what they want, and they know, for example, and also as well as the projects are done slightly different. So you might find the writing's been done. The layouts might even have started, and then they'll use the approach the art director to say, right, here's all the white space you've got to fill. That's where you need a quarter page illustration. That's where you need a half page. Off you go. So the art director will read that page. And let's say, for example, it could be, you know, a page about picking locks. Well, it's quite straightforward. You need a picture of someone picking a lock. But while other people might say, yeah, to the artist, okay, I just need a picture of someone picking a lock. Other art directors might go to the extreme and say, right, I want a halfling balanced on a beam overlooking a door, reaching down. You know, and that's fine. That's fine. As long as you allow a little bit of flexibility. I mean, yeah, you would work up thumbnails to send to the art director, you know, and you would have your favourite that you would secretly hope they choose. Right, you know. Right. But it's always nice to have a bit more freedom when it comes down to it. But, you know, some art directors for the big companies don't like that, you know, and that's what they pay the money for, I suppose.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, and of course they have different requirements. You know, I always was working on shall we say the low end of the industry, and so you know, for me, I always assumed that that people were doing it because they wanted to do it, right? They're excited about it. None of us are doing it for the money, or else we're idiots.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sure, you want to get paid for your time, yes, you know, and that's of course reasonable. But I'm saying you could do almost anything else and make more money. So if money is your motive, so I tended to try to appeal to the other side. It's like I want to see what you want to draw.
Yeah, because you're interested in the final product, which is like your baby. So it's kind of like I was a bit the same with Extreme Earth, where I had the visuals in mind and I created the art, and it was great when Joe Bardell sort of came back with the writing because it gives that. Because suddenly you're not just the creator, but you're also a customer. You know what I mean? You're also like a spectator. You're also someone's pleasure from somebody else doing something in your universe that makes it better for you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So you know, as a writer, it's great to see unusual art come through where someone's got their own visual pitch of your world. Well, as an artist, it's great to see a writer coming forward with bits that, you know, your artwork stimulated.
Yes. Yeah.
I was on there was a Q&A panel I was on for AetherCon a couple weeks ago, and they were asking me why I got it into publishing, and it was, wow, we're getting way the fuck afield from talking about zombies, aren't we? but he was like, you know, why did you choose to do this with your spare time when you could be, you know, go-go dancing or canoeing or hunting or anything else? And I was like, well, you know, I wanted to produce games that I was proud of. And I found that when I was freelancing for companies that, you know, didn't involve Chuck Rice, you know, my first couple adventures in freelancing, you get a book that comes out with some layout that looks like it was done by, you know, maybe not the person you would have chosen, and maybe they got some stock art that's been used by 100 products before yours, and it's not a book you want to show to anybody.
Nope.
Yeah.
You know, working with Chuck and you guys, and, you know, eventually working with my own company where I work with John and Aid extensively, you know, you get to create products where you like the writing, you like the layout, you like the art, and you're producing things that you're proud of that you don't feel like you got to hide, you know, on the bookshelf. So
right.
You know, especially when you're effectively, it's a hobby industry for you at this point, because you're not wizards, you're not Green Ronin. You know, it's, you want to make things that you feel good about. And so that's what I would say on that. Hey, back to zombies. Aid, favorite zombie movie?
Crikey, the second Romero movie. Which is that? Dawn
of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead, yes. There you go. Dawn of the Dead. It's got blue zombies in it. I mean, what's that? What's that about?
Yes, I should also mention very helpful on the book. Darren Drader, speaking of Wizards of the Coast, he wrote D20 Apocalypse for Wizards of the Coast. I brought him on as a developer. I just wanted, you know, Darren and I are acquainted and we've talked before, and so I kind of knew his take on things, and I respected his design chops, and so I brought him on board as a developer just to kind of backstop me and look at it from a designer's perspective, and he gave me so much good direction about, okay, I think you need to, you need more work here, you need to put it, like, for example, this book had no vehicles in it when I first showed it to Darren, and Darren was like, well, why is that? And I was like, well, because, I mean, you're not going to be fighting in vehicles, right? So why do you need rules for them? And he was like, you're not going to be fighting in vehicles, but the person that buys it is probably going to be like, what happens if, yeah, exactly.
I think that, and the same goes with, because our good friend Walt Robillard, he made quite a bit of contribution, didn't he, Chuck?
Yes.
Walt gave us a good advice on the weaponry and firearms, etc., that could be around and how they all work, etc.
Yes, I kind of ran into, when I was doing Blood and Guts, I think is when I first met Walt, and also met a very fine gentleman named Rich Spainauer, who
Survivor's Podcast, yeah.
Yeah, they kind of approached me and sent me emails about the book, and they were like, when I first released Blood and Guts, and they were like, well, I mean, the guns here are better, but, you know, there are still these things that aren't right and these things, and so rather than kind of dismiss them, I embraced that, because at that time I had never even fired a gun, and so, you know, obviously...
You see, that's why Walt's always useful.
Yes.
If ever you write anything, you get to the bit in the book where it's, okay, the chapter title's Firearms and Injuring People, then you just know all you got to do is give Walt a ring.
Yes.
And Walt will be able to tell you everything about firearms.
He is so helpful. And then, like, Rich gave me great advice of, like, I wound up, like... Rich and I are Facebook friends, and he's always posting about the runs he's doing. And so as I was working through the athletic skills, I was like, how much could a man carry, and how fast could he go while carrying it? And so I dropped an email to Rich, who's a retired colonel from the United States Army, and he was like, okay, I can tell you the answer to that question. You need to carry this much, and you can go this far with it, and if you can't get there within this amount of time, I need to know why.
You know, one of my gaming buddies from Indiana visited me out here in Colorado a couple years ago, and I was like, you're in Colorado, you have to go hiking. And we were out in the mountains, and he was like, now I understand why movement is reduced over hilly terrain.
Not at all a geeky thing to say.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, Darren Drager, is he... What company did you release After Zombies through? This is a different company I hadn't seen before.
This is a new company that I started. It's called Apocalyptic Games. I gave it all the thought that I gave Vigilance Press as a name, which is to say about 45 seconds. Literally, the first book I self-released was called Vigilance, and so I was like, well, I guess I'm Vigilance Press. And I used to get interesting looks at the bank, by the way, when I would hand them a check. I said, one teller kind of looked at the check, and he looked at me, and he goes, so this is a website? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, is it like a Second Amendment website? Like, is it like a guns website? And I was like, no. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So since it's since I was thinking about doing a post-apocalyptic game, and I just decided Apocalyptic Games. There you go. It was literally the first two words that popped into my head.
And why not?
Okay. Well, that's cool. I saw Darren Drager's name on some of the products under Apocalyptic Games. I thought maybe he was the guy who was running the company, but it's yours, so that's cool.
Darren, again, because Darren has been on AZ literally, I think he was the second person who read it. I had about 60 pages at that point. The final book is 144, by the way, just to give you an idea of where I was in the project. Although, the book was runnable at 60 pages. Like, the skeleton was there. It just needed to be, you know, I needed to add more tables, basically.
Yeah. And so
he read it, and again, he and I are our acquaintances. We talk about design, and so he had decided to do the Spire... is what he called it. He wanted to do kind of a third-party, fifth edition kind of dungeon magazine type thing, where he would just do fifth edition D&D adventures. And he had a Patreon, but beyond the patrons, it would be free to everyone else. So the patrons were basically backing a thing that was going to go into the world for free, and he knew that I had set up Apocalyptic Games for the eventual purpose of releasing After Zombies, and he was like, so I was going to start a company, but why do we both need companies for your book that's not out and my couple of free things that I'm going to do? Why don't you just release them? And I was like, yeah, excellent.
That works. Well, cool. All right. Well, cool. What's next for After Zombies? You doing adventures? You doing supplements?
I definitely want to support the game. I have a kind of mechanical idea rattling around in my head that I want to release. I would definitely like to do adventures. I've talked to John about that. John, I need a, you know, if you give me a map, it'll help sales. I'll do an adventure around it. So yeah, my plan is to kind of support the book and try to help it find its audience. At this time, I'm thinking anything I release to support it will be free. It's literally just going to be, you know, kind of a free update type situation.
Have you thought about an adventure set in a Renaissance fair with zombies?
The sessions I ran with my guys when I ran AZ, and Chuck could probably explain a bit more about it, it's really more based around you surviving the day after and each day beyond the sort of start of the apocalypse.
Right.
I kind of like a more sort of post-apocalyptic feel, so I wanted to sort of have the guys starting the game about 6 to sort of 8 months after it had really hit. So mm-hmm. There was that bit more desperation. So the way I started mine, because I thought, what do you do? And I thought, well, I remember back in a day when, you know, they might be frozen cryogenically in some kind of underground military base, and they cry. I thought, no, it's been done to death. So what I did was I had them all, because the fact is you are all things like bank clerks or lawyers or mm-hmm. you know, policemen. I had the more reality TV stars on an island. So, you know, like, you know, so they're basically on this island, meant to be for a month. Then the supplies stopped. No one came to pick them up. 6 months goes by, and they managed to get off the island because a boat sort of becomes shipwrecked. When they get to shore, you know, a few miles inland, they find that the apocalypse has happened and the zombies are there, you know. So it was quite a good way of running it.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
You need to draw a map of an island for me, John.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, cool. Well, hey, so folks, check out After Zombies right now on RPG Now. A couple of easy ways to find it. Just search for After Zombies on RPG Now and you're there. Or if you search under publishers for Apocalyptic Games, it comes up pretty quickly, too. Yes. You can own it right now for $15, and the character sheet is free. So, sorry, $14.99, my bad.
Exactly, way less than $15.
That's stale at that price.
Yes.
In these current economic times, every cent counts. So.
Yes.
All right, cool. Well, hey, guys, I need to wrap it up and get back to my soul-deadening corporate job. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap things up?
I think we covered it.
Cool. Aiden, anything?
No, I think that's it. I think it's all good.
All right, cool. All right, well, hey, thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.